Well, it's a great joy to be with all of you, bright, shining angels of Shiva, on this most holy and auspicious evening. The practice of yoga began with the teaching by Shiva as to how to attain the realization of oneness. And Kali Yuga ends, the time cycle ends, with the fulfillment of that teaching. At the end of Kali Yuga, when the world has fallen into despair, disgrace, degradation, hopelessness, nihilism, atheism, materialism, brutality, and loss of all that is virtuous, good and great about the human creature, Shiva comes to us and returns us to our divine nature. What could be a greater gift? And so for all of those whose ego identities have become exhausted and needing to be shed like the skin of a snake that got too small for it, and one can no longer live comfortably in one's skin because one's soul requires an infinite habitat in which to thrive and to spread out the wings of our soul's nature to fly into the empyrean of divine light and love and joy and recede from a world of terror and of apparent injustice and evil. It's at that moment that the infinite goodness of God returns to the world for the salvation of every soul who seeks it. And although we tend to teach in accord with the will of Shiva the truth of non-duality, because Shiva underlies and animates and choreographs and secretly directs the unfoldment of the cosmic drama, but the truth is that the return to Shiva consciousness must pass through a very extreme level of duality to reach Shiva. And you know, the word Advaita doesn't really mean non-duality. It's really very badly translated. It means not to. But not two means negative two, if we're using mathematical terms. But in mathematics, negative two and positive two are not different. And because we use language and abuse language and have become trapped in a prison of language, Shiva must reach us in part through the gateway of language. And language is always divided between the signifier and the signified. And so as soon as the concept of non-duality is put into the field of language, it becomes duality, because a concept is not the real. And the signifier and the signified are always separated. But worse still, the signified is separated from its referent, which has nothing to do with language, nothing to do with any narratives or conceptualization. Shiva abides in the real that never touches upon the symbolic. And so, in order to reach the bliss of Shiva's presence, we have to recognize that each of us lives simultaneously in three different value systems, three different realities. Because the reality, or the illusory reality, to be truthful, of the ego that lives in language, constant mental chatter that takes it out of the present and constantly moving from past to imagined future, and always with some anxiety and worry and lostness, even when that may be hidden or compensated by some illusory sense of certainty. When one digs into the reality of the ego, the core problem for it is that the ego has a very limited tolerance for aloneness. And because of that, it creates dependencies upon others in the physical plane and upon things and substances and situations, etc., that give it a sense of meaningfulness and of being loved. Because the love of God is not real enough for the ego, because it lives in the imaginary, not in the real. And because of that limited toleration of the strength to stand alone, the ego cannot cope with non-duality. And so, whatever occurs to the ego comes in the form of karma. And karma eventually produces suffering. Karma for the ego is a kind of poison, but a poisonous residue of its own need to avoid loneliness. Because that always has the price that one pays for some kind of dependency. And so, at the same time that the ego is losing its capacity for coherence, because once you lose the ability to know yourself, you cannot really know anything accurately. and the ego's knowledge base becomes contaminated by karmic deferrals of truth. And because karma does not, at least through a lot of the situations that we go through, result immediately in the law's consequences, the ego has a margin of opportunity to create a faulty understanding of why what happened had to happen. And to fill that gap of knowledge with projections and with fantasies and wishful thinking and sometimes with awfulizing. But at the same time that this is happening, at the soul level, the individual's intelligence is increasing from the amount of suffering that one receives. Because for the soul, the world is not a reality. It's not a place to get lost. It's a dream which contains the information of divine presence, the wisdom of understanding karma and of understanding that which is beyond the field of karma and beyond the veils that produce that illusion. And so the soul is growing and learning at the same time that the ego is falling and losing its capacity for sovereignty. And at the same time, at the level of Shivoham, of course, there is no participation, no perceptible participation in the unfoldment of events. But this level of our being is out of reach of the bandwidth of the ego's capacity to attune to its own true nature. And so the way back to Shiva's heart for a yogi comes through surrender. In the same way that because everything is fractally self-similar at every level, even though at the phenomenal level it's a bizarre form of almost cartoonish parody of what goes on at the highest levels, still there's a similarity. So in the phenomenal plane now, the human creatures are being enslaved into a digital tyranny, enslaved in a way that they never were before. And so at the spiritual level, the ego must be willing to enslave itself to God. This is why the concept of the Das and the Dasi developed in medieval India. One has to be willing to give one's life for Shiva. One has to be willing to serve God without conditions, without questions, without caring where one is put and what kind of service one is asked to do. One has to be that fully surrendered that all that matters is that I am accepted into Shiva's service, wherever I am put. And if that's to clean latrines, beautiful. That's how the kingdom of heaven is built, you know, through Shaucha. Or if it's through some other mode of expression of higher levels of our creativity, because we have earned that, then so be it. But without making any demands upon Shiva, but simply, I am here to serve in whatever way is required. It is through this that one achieves liberation. And the end of loneliness, because the presence of Shiva then will fill one's heart. And that alone brings joy. That alone will soothe the anxiety and eliminate the lower death drive of the ego that otherwise can't cope with its fallenness, its lostness, its weakness. And strength comes through that surrender, as well as wisdom and all of the other gifts that Shiva gives. And at some point, one may be lucky enough to be appointed as one of Shiva's attendants. And it is then that one will actually know the presence of Shiva directly. At the end of time, Shiva comes in a very unusual form, which is known in India as the Kalpavriksha. Are you all familiar with that term? I've mentioned it a number of times here, but I'll explain it. Kalpa means the cycle of time, and the cycle of time, for all intents and purposes, is life. It's the lifespan of the cosmos. And so we could say it is eternal life, in the sense that there is nothing outside that. And so the kalpa vriksha, vriksha means the tree. So it's the kalpa tree. But what is it the equivalent of in the Western Bible of the tree of life? And even more, it's the equivalent of the Christmas tree. The evergreen tree that you put up at the end of the year, which is the end of the kalpa, to celebrate the coming of Christ consciousness, right? It's the same teaching put into slightly different terminology. But there are gifts that are put under the tree for those who were nice and not too naughty. And so those who are surrendered to Shiva receive gifts at this time. Now, what kind of gifts does the Lord give to his attendants? Well, there are many different kinds of gifts that you may receive. One of them is a gift of a new archetype. Because many people have either misplaced their archetype, or it has become somewhat tarnished or degraded or not entirely clear in its divine nature. And so they cannot fully live the power of the archetypal self. That is always intended by Shiva as the garment of the soul. and the archetypal nature of the soul's relationship to Shiva determines the karma of the entire cycle of time, because it goes through the various phases and permutations of the archetypal blossoming and expression. And so it is at this time that this will be given to those who have developed the ability to carry the burden of responsibility that comes with accepting a high archetypal role in the cosmic drama. And this is the way that the next cycle is being prepared. The next cycle beginning with the time of gods and goddesses, of those who are the living archetypes, no longer having ego or even soul consciousness, but are direct manifestations of aspects of the one infinitely beautiful and auspicious and almighty self. And so this is the time when these gifts are being given, and hopefully you are all asking Lord Shiva to be included in that number, and willing to fulfill that responsibility. So this is what Mahashivaratri is about. God comes at the end of time, in the night of history, when all is very dark and seemingly hopeless, and God comes to create a new world. But only those who recognize that the world is their dream, not something outside, not something separate, but that the world is the result of what has happened to the archetypal identity that has created a Kali Yuga rather than a Sat Yuga. And so in Mahashivaratri, the great night, which is a holiday that the Hindus celebrate every year, but in fact, it comes only once in the entire Kalpa. And the gifts are given that will last through the next entire cycle of time and beyond, because the gifts include access to the higher dimensions that are a kind of club or place of rest and of command and control of the angels, and those whose roles require a vision that is more panoramic and includes the entire morphogenic field of time and space to move in and to work their seven-dimensional chess moves in this beautifully orchestrated struggle between light and dark, that is a dance that is ultimately fulfilled as the Tandava, the dance of Shiva, that has two versions, the Rudra Tandava and the Ananda Tandava. And yogis prefer to dance the Ananda Tandava. We are dancing the joy of the bliss of a new world being created, and the Rudra Tandava is the dance of the destruction of the old. And so the yogis continue to increase their bliss, even as those who are not connecting to Shiva suffer more and more of the turning of the screw of karma, until they too are convinced that it's a good idea to surrender to God. But the ego cannot read the fine print that is involved in that surrender and all that it entails. But the soul is given knowledge. And that knowledge includes certain skills and abilities to serve that would not be otherwise within one's pay grade as an egoic being. And to attune to Shiva, therefore, requires not using the instruments of the ego, which are the five senses and the use of conceptualization or imagination, but an attunement to the real power that is present, but only perceivable when the ego is not obscuring that presence. And so the connection to Shiva is not through thought, but through love. It's the language of love that Shiva speaks. If you have made Shiva your beloved, then you will hear Shiva speaking to you. And the more love that we have and offer egolessly to Shiva, and the more we express it joyously and openly and without boundaries, the more that the reciprocity of that love is given. And so tonight is a night of lovemaking between Shiva and Shakti. In Hinduism, it's actually the night of the marriage of Shiva with Parvati, also known as Uma, also known as Sati, also known as many, many other names. Every form of the goddess really is an archetypal aspect of the consort of Lord Shiva. And it's also Sophia, right, who creates the mirror through which the light of Shiva is seen, and the awareness and the light are one. So we are in that place in which the unification of the soul and God is consummated. So I hope you are all here tonight to enjoy the consummation of that union as the fulfillment of your own heart's deepest yearning. And it will be fulfilled.